Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far. As we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
So here we are back on the Bettinelli Homestead with another fascinating week. We didn't actually do that much this past week, did we? The girls had an adventure.
Yeah, Bella and Sophie had an adventure.
Let's talk about what's been going on. So Isabella and Sophie went on the Polar Challenge. So they're in Scouts, BSA Scouts, Boy Scouts of America, Scouts for Girls. Still trying to figure out how to talk about that 6 months in, but it's not Girl Scouts. So they went to this event, four Scouts, boys and girls, where they call it the Polar Challenge because it's a winter activity event.
It takes place in February.
In February in New England. So I don't think they do the Polar Challenge like in the Miami area for Scouts.
Probably they have different things that they do.
And they just go camping because, you know, it's nice weather. So it's probably actually the better weather to go camping than in midsummer, frankly, for those Scouts. That's kind of curious.
There was an overnight camping component, which our girls chose not to do.
It was called the freeze out. So although there's only four of them, so they're not big enough to do their own group for this. So they linked up with another troop of girls who are bigger, and that troop did camp out overnight, although they camped in a cabin. So,
yeah,
well. I think a lot of the groups camped outside in tents, which, you know, it's intense.
Very intense.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'll be here all week. So those groups camped out, but our girls went down in the morning. They went with the scoutmaster and his wife. They drove down. They were only going to go for half day because poor Chris, the scoutmaster, got a stomach bug last week, and so he was not feeling it. And so half a day was about as much as he could do. But they apparently had a good time.
Yeah, they said they did five events. There were more that they could have done, but they picked five or somehow. I'm not sure what.
In concert with the girls that they connected with the other troop.
So they did building a shelter and an orienteering / semaphore.
I'm sure Bella loved the semaphore.
Yeah. Chris said she rocked the semaphore, which I'm not surprised. Swallows and Amazons made Sophie and Bella very excited about semaphore.
Yes.
And they've been playing with it some.
That and the animal tracking.
And then animal tracking. Yes. Bella also.
She's a bit of an animal whisperer.
Yeah.
She always has.
We did a homeschooling animal tracking in the snow thing several years ago that the kids loved. We should, you know, we had a local ranger do that for us.
It'd be fun to do it again.
Would be fun to do it again. We all put on snowsuits and we went hiking in the woods in the snow and found all sorts of cool animal tracks, which was fun because it was not manufactured. It was, let's go walking in the woods and see what we can find.
Right.
With somebody who knew those particular woods well, so knew where kind of to look for things, but it was sort of, we looked at what we found. Let's see, what were the other events they did? Then they did a ice rescue where they had a scout pretend to be stuck on the ice.
With a broken leg, right?
With a broken leg, yeah. And so they had to pull her off of the ice and then...
Quote unquote ice, because there's no ice.
There was no ice. It was,
there's no snow. It was like 35 degrees out that on Saturday.
It was like 32.
Okay. It's been very warm here, though.
But yeah, we don't have any ice or snow on the ground. And then they had to do first aid. I think Bella said that they had to splint her leg and Bella made a crutch using her newly mastered lashing skill.
Very good. Thank you, Adam, Assistant Scoutmaster Adam, who taught them all lashing.
Right. And then let's see, what else did they do? The other girls did the build the fire, but Bella and Sophie's group did not do that.
Okay.
I know there's one I'm forgetting. Anyway, they had a great time outdoors in the cold, doing outdoorsy fun stuff. This was the other one.
Oh, okay.
Blindfold, build a tent.
Oh, right.
All the girls in the patrol were blindfolded except the patrol leader, and she had to direct all the blindfolded girls through the process of erecting a tent.
We saw that on Survivor, didn't we? They did that. They do that a lot on Survivor. Remember that years ago we watched?
I don't remember that one.
We used to watch Survivor. They would occasionally do one where the tribe had someone had to direct the tribe through a maze.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I do remember that. It wasn't putting up a tent.
It wasn't putting up a tent, but it was like one person has to direct a bunch of people who are blindfolded. Yes.
Yeah. So she said that they didn't get the tent all the way up, but they made significant progress. It was an unfamiliar tent that none of them had put up before, and Bella thought that if they had done it once before, then they would have been able to do the challenge much more easily.
Mm. That is a leadership following orders challenge. Yeah.
Chris said they did really well with the leadership and teamwork on that challenge. That was good to hear, especially since there were two different groups of girls that had never met before that day.
Right. I'm going to guess that random group of girls is more likely to do this better than a random group of boys of the same age.
Communication skills are a little bit higher in...
developmentally at that age.
In 11 to 14-year-old girls are a little bit better at the communication social stuff than the same age group boys. It's just...
They're all, well, testosterone is starting to assert itself, and they're all want to be the alpha male. They're going to be butting heads.
Right, whereas girls are much more...
Cooperative.
Yeah.
It's natural. It is. They had to be at Chris's house at 6 a.m., so I had to get up at 5. I couldn't go. I had a bunch of recordings for podcasts Saturday, so I couldn't go. So I had to get them up at 5. Bella was up. She got up pretty good. Sophie is not a morning person.
She's
a morning person, but she's a person of... But she's very much about routine, and this was out of the routine. Yes. Like, waking her up early is not easy.
What she likes is she likes to wake up on her own before everybody else and have like a good half hour to an hour of quiet to eat her breakfast in peace and quiet with nobody else awake in the house. That's what Sophie likes.
And then do schoolwork.
Right. And like, then she does her schoolwork she eats.
Most of her schoolwork is done by 7.
Right. But when it comes to having to get out of bed, get dressed and like go do something, that's not the same thing at all. So you would think that being an early riser would mean that she would be good at that, but it's actually the opposite. If she knows that she can't have her peace and quiet and alone time, she does not want to get out of bed.
No.
she's very much a lone wolf in the first thing in the morning, which I understand. I don't like being around people when I wake up first thing.
Yeah, yeah. But they went, they came back, it was fun, they had a good time, so that's, I'm glad they did that. And, you know, it's significant that they went without me. Like, most of the scouting stuff so far, I've gone along, because they'd be more comfortable with me there.
Right.
But I want them to get used to I want them to be able to do these things without me. Now, Isabella has been doing things, like she did that thing last summer, the role-playing summer camp thing. And so she's fine, but Sophie, I think is she's, you know, she's a couple years younger, so she's getting used to that. She's getting into that as well, so that's good. The younger kids are not there yet. I wouldn't expect them to be just yet.
Yeah.
So what else is going on? So the other thing that's been going on is this is the not so great thing. Being given some Lent to live. Our dishwasher of 7 years. It has expired. It is no longer
functional.
It's kaput, which is really distressing because it's only 7 years old, which I feel like it should last longer. I look it up. They say, a typical dishwasher lasts from 7 to 12 years, an average of 10 years. So it's a bit young. We've had a number of repairs, though. Like, the reason why I say it's kaput is it's not washing half the dishwasher, the upper half, and there's something, that's blocking a pipe and I can't get in there. It's integrated into the structure of the thing anyway. I could call a repairman, but I'm $150 into it just by having a repairman come, and who knows how much it would cost to actually fix it. And then you're substantially a substantial way toward a new dishwasher at that point. So do I throw good money after bad? the other thing is last time we had the repairman out to fix the dishwasher a year ago, we've had to repair this dishwasher like every year the past 3 or 4 years.
Which is not surprising, given that we do...
There's seven of us. We do two.
At least two.
At least
sometimes
two runs, sometimes three runs of dishes a day. We have a lot of dishes. And you know how I know we do have a lot of dishes? Because now you and I are hand washing all of the dishes.
Yes, we are.
Oh my gosh, it's like an hour. And this is where we have failed. We did not train the children to be able to wash the dishes. They can dry them. They can unload the dishwasher, put them away.
We could invest the time right now and train them to do so.
I know.
But then that would be
more time on top of...
Right. It's an investment of time.
Right. Washing the dishes, i.e. putting them in the dishwasher and washing the pots and pans by hand, that takes long enough on most nights after dinner. Hand washing them now takes even longer, although we're getting better at washing throughout the day so that they don't pile up. But then teaching them to wash dishes, that would be even longer. I know.
You put in the time at the outset, you invest the time, and then you get back in huge dividends.
Yes, I know. this is something where I feel like, I mean, they do other things. This is just something you and I have always done. I generally do the dinner dishes, but this is something you and I have always done. And then we give them other things to do for the end of the day sorts of chores.
Right.
So it's not that they don't do anything. They're sitting around eating bonbons while we clean up, but it's
right.
So the good news is we've taken money out of our tax refund, which we were going to use for other things, but such is life. And we've purchased a new dishwasher, which will be delivered later this week. But until then, we were hand washing, which is a nice Lenten sacrifice.
I would like to mention, I'm very proud of my hack, though, which is... what to do with the dishes as you wash them.
Because there's no room on the counter to pile them up and dry.
And we don't have a rack.
A dish rack. Yeah.
So I borrowed an idea from my sister who used to do this.
Lived in a terrible apartment.
Right. And we just stack the clean dishes in the dishwasher. Because, you know.
And let them dry there.
It's got racks.
Yes.
Where it can drip dry.
Yeah. And a drain.
Yeah,
now,
it's amazing.
I think it's important not to close the dishwasher all the way, because then you have like a moist, warm environment
right. That's
closed. So that would not be good. But I think leaving it propped open is fine. It's worked out. It wouldn't be something I'd want to do long term, because I'm not sure that it drains out of the dishwasher properly. You're going to have standing gross water.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to do it in the summer. Ugh.
Yeah. But it's cold enough where it's cold inside. It's up against the back wall of the house, and that's cool enough, you know, day and night. So that's, yeah, dishes. And I know, I mean, many of you probably do already hand wash dishes, but there's seven of us. There's a lot of dishes. They get a new spoon and a knife and a cup for every time that they've gotten used to this idea that, you know, you have a dishwasher, so you just get a new thing. And yeah. You know, we reap what we sow.
Yes, indeed.
So what's coming up? We've got Sophie's birthday this week.
Yes,
on Wednesday,
we do.
Which we suddenly realized this morning. Oh, it's her birthday. Like, it's one of those things where you know it's her birthday. We've been getting presents together for her
right.
and that sort of thing. But then there's like you have this concept that it's coming, and then it's the concrete, oh, it's Wednesday. I've got to prepare for that.
Right. Well, also, like, yesterday, I think, or the day before, I sort of sat down and said, okay, when should I do the grocery shopping this week? We've got it off schedule, so I usually like to do it on Thursday or Friday, but somehow we've got off kilter, and it's...
Well, Ash Wednesday didn't help with that.
Right, it shifted to the beginning of the week, at any rate. And
which
so,
is the worst.
I hate it. And so I don't like doing it on Mondays, because it's Monday already. Then Tuesday...
Well, the market doesn't have the stuff usually restocked
right.
from the weekend.
Monday's a horrible day to go grocery shopping. Then Tuesday is Tuesday afternoon. The girls have their scouts. And then this week, there's a doctor's appointment on Tuesday. And then actually two doctor's appointments.
One you forgot.
Because I had my appointment on the calendar. I looked at it like a month ago to see when my appointment was. And it was there. And then somehow it disappeared off the calendar. I do not know how.
She blamed me for deleting it. I'm not sure why.
Well, I know I didn't delete it. In any case, my doctor's office called me to remind me this afternoon,
this morning, to remind
me of my appointment. Yeah. And I was very glad that they called because I had totally forgotten that it was this week. I mean, I knew it was coming up, but I was wondering when it was coming up. And I had looked at my calendar and I couldn't find the appointment.
So that's why.
So we ended up going to grocery shopping today.
Because you can't go Wednesday because Wednesday is Sophie's birthday.
And
which
by,
means
we're going to be out of food long before Thursday.
Right. And because the reason you can't do it Wednesday is because you're going to have to bake a cake.
Yes.
We're going to take her out for dinner for her birthday and there's presents in the morning.
I mean, I suppose if push came to shove, I could have just bought a cake at the grocery store, but they like homemade cakes better.
Yes. I mean, we make these sacrifices.
This is true.
So Sophie's birthday is coming up, and so she doesn't know where she wants to go for dinner. I'm not sure she'll know until...
No. We had a conversation today.
You did? I was thinking we would know until, like, Wednesday afternoon.
Oh, yes. We've decided. I might have nudged her a little bit.
You helped her decide.
I made a helpful suggestion.
Where are we going?
Wahlburgers.
Wow. Wahlburgers. Interesting. That's not a bad choice. Do people know what Wahlburgers is? So, you know, the famous Boston acting family, the Wahlbergs.
Mark and Donnie.
Mark is probably more famous now. Donnie. Mark's the good Catholic boy. Well, I mean, they're all Catholic, but Mark's the one who goes to mass and gets ashes, and everybody's always extolling him on social media because he's the good Catholic boy.
Yeah.
Anyway, and their brother's a chef, and they've opened up this chain of burger joints. And the flagship one, the first one, is in two towns over from us, so which we like to go to. We went there for your birthday. That's right. We talked about this. We went there for
Yeah, we went
for
there for
birthday.
My birthday, and I like it. They're good burgers.
They are good burgers.
They're really good burgers. And Sophie was amenable. She didn't want to go to Bertucci's because we went there for Anthony's birthday. And we had just been to Chili's not too long ago.
When we lost the power.
When we lost the power. Yeah. She doesn't really love...
The Mexican sombrero?
No, she didn't really want that. And she didn't really want Vietnamese.
The
pho. It's not her favorite. Because
we went there for Lucy's birthday.
We went there for Lucy's birthday. So
and Jake's isn't open yet. Jake's seafood won't be open until the summer.
Right. So I had a little brainstorm and I said, what about a good burger? I've kind of been craving a good burger. And we can't go to Five Guys anymore because Peanuts and Lucy
are
not.
Last time we went to Five Guys, Lucy ended up in the hospital.
Right. Emergency room. Don't really want to do that on Sophie's birthday. So we'll skip Five Guys for now.
Yeah. I have to admit, I went to Five Guys on Sunday.
Which may have been one of the reasons why I was thinking burgers. Maybe.
But I went because my mom had been given a Five Guys gift card that she was never going to use. I'm not sure. My nephew gave it to her. My mom is not I'm just going to go to Five Guys and get a burger and fries kind of person.
Well, you know, nephews don't think about these sorts of things.
Hey, Grandma, I'm going to give this to you. Do you want it? And she's like, okay. And then she's like, hey, I've got this thing that Pete gave me. Can you want it? I'm like, okay. So it
worked out.
Yeah.
He got to give something to her. She got to give something to you.
Everyone's happy to have a burger.
And you got a burger. Yes.
All right. And then the other thing that's coming up is my biennial. Is it biennial or biannual? Twice a year. Biannual.
Biannual. Biennial is every 2 years.
That's right, because we are in the quadriennial thing for leap year. Anyway, biannual rant about daylight savings time. Yes, folks, don't forget this Sunday, daylight savings time, unless you're in Arizona or parts of Indiana, you get to leave your clocks where it is, but everyone else, we're springing ahead. And
we hates it, my precious. We hates it.
Like, I don't care. Like, I don't mind having the extra hour of daylight, you know, in the evening. Is that what we're getting? An extra hour?
I have no idea.
I don't mind having an extra hour in the evening. I'm fine with that. It's pick one. Stop switching. Stop going back and forth. Just pick one. Stay there. Stop messing up in the entire country's sleep schedule. For something that is not wives' tale about it, that we save energy.
I read an article by a guy who is a scientist who studies sleep. And he basically said that we're deliberately giving ourselves jet lag twice a year.
Uh-huh.
Why would you do that? Why would you give yourself jet lag twice a year?
The entire country is getting jet lag twice a year.
It's stupid.
It is stupid. Ugh. And when we had babies, it was even worse.
Yeah.
Because babies do not know that the clock has changed.
And I can never remember, like, somehow I go through the entire week of like, oh, no wonder the kids are so hungry.
It's an hour later or an hour earlier or something.
The timing of meals, I can never figure out.
At least almost all clocks now auto set themselves. So you don't have to go around changing every clock and finding clocks you forgot to change. You still have to change the car clocks. I don't know why car clocks can't.
And the oven and the microwave. And that's it.
But everything else, like, you know, you add we don't have a VCR blink in 12 these days.
Thank goodness. I hate that.
Or the worst is your clock radio when you used to forget to change to fix the clock radio.
Uh-huh.
And you'd wake up late for mass or early for mass.
Right. But now everyone uses their cell phones for everyone, alarm clock, right?
Right. Does anybody not use their cell phone?
Actually, I know some people don't like their cell phones in their bedrooms. And so they dock them like in a family room or a kitchen or something. And so they do actually
have clock radio.
Not a clock radio, but like an alarm clock.
Oh, yeah. I want one of those ones like from Groundhog Day where it flips. Flip, flip. So you can hear that all night. Flip.
Oh, my
flip.
Gosh. I would kill somebody. Oh, no way.
Does someone sell, like ThinkGeek should sell a Groundhog Day clock radio that plays that every morning, that patter from that morning radio show that I Got You, Babe, and then good morning, the whole thing that they do. Oh my gosh.
You could probably just like record it and have your cell phone play that for you.
I could. Oh.
And then, oh my gosh, did I just say that? Oh. And then I would kill you as soon as it started playing.
Oh, actually, what I was thinking before that is I could get an Arduino and program it, you know, that like, Take a what? An Arduino. It's a tiny programmable computer. Don't worry. It's a hobbyist computer board that you can program to do all kinds of things.
Okay. I've never heard of that
it's
before.
It's like a blank slate thing. Never mind what it is. But you could get an old clock radio, the flippy flippy kind, at like a yard sale, open it up, make some space, put that in there, and have that just, when the alarm goes off, it would not be that hard to do. I mean, you might need some soldering skills. It might be a little beyond my skills, but I could imagine that being done. I can imagine somebody doing that as a project. That would be awesome.
you better be careful or some enterprising listener with mad skills is going to like send you one.
No. You better be careful because I'd be very happy to receive that.
No. That could live in the office.
Oh my gosh, that is such a great idea. I'm going to have to make this happen. Anyway, so I'm too gleeful about this.
Way too gleeful.
Let's move on. Yes. Now, see, I thought I was going to be ranting and angry about daylight savings time. Now I'm excited about something. I'm very happy. So let's move on to talk about what we've been eating. Last week, we didn't talk about food because it was Ash Wednesday and everybody was hangry. Because they were fasting. This week, we're going to talk about some foods that we like.
We're going to talk about fasting foods?
Fasting foods or abstinence foods.
Right.
Yeah. So the first thing, so Friday we had, that first week of Lent is tricky because you get two abstinence days. You got Ash Wednesday and you got Friday, and then you have Meat Thursday. That's what I call it.
Yeah.
Or the meat sandwich of Lent. So we had fish on Wednesday.
We did.
We went to the grocery store and picked up some fish on Tuesday, and we cooked it on Wednesday. And then, so what do we eat on Friday? Because
We
don't want fish again. And we didn't want tuna fish.
And we have some very, very strong anti-bean sentiments. So
anti-bean, yes.
I know a lot of people really rely heavily on legumes during Lent, beans, lentils, etc.
I'd be happy to do that, but
No, it's not going to fly.
Like even red beans and rice. I mean, that would be.
That's way too carby for me, and I would not.
Well, this is true. The rice, yeah.
No.
So.
I mean, I love it, but.
So who came up with the idea? I came up with the idea. I said we should make naan pizza.
Did you come up with it?
Well, not the idea of naan pizza, but I suggested pizza.
Right.
I thought we'd have to order it, but you said naan pizza.
Naan pizza.
So have we talked about naan pizza?
I think we must have.
Okay, so just as a short recap, the grocery store sells pre-made naan in a package, like a couple, and they're what, like 8-inch rounds, nine?
Yeah.
Semi-round?
Yeah, something like that.
We keep them in the freezer, take them out. You make a thick pasta sauce, basically, and you thicken it up.
Yep.
With some extra tomato paste and some other things. And then just bake in the oven.
Cheese.
Yeah. Sauce, cheese.
I think we must have talked about this. I'm getting deja vu, serious deja vu here.
But we were talking, like, you're saying you almost like the non-pizza better than delivery. DiGiorno.
No. I do. Well, you know what? I think part of it is I like my sauce better than I like the pizza place's sauce. I'm proud of my sauce. I've spent a lot of time getting my sauce just
pretty good.
Right.
It's pretty good, I gotta say.
To my own personal taste.
Yep.
Which is actually, ironically, trying to recreate my favorite pizza from my childhood.
Interesting. Which one?
Mr. Gaddy's Pizza in Austin. I think they have some in like Dallas. And so anyway, it's a Texas chain.
Texas pizza. Hmm.
They had this, their sauce was really different from any other sauce I'd had. And I think I finally like pinpointed it, that it had anise in it.
Anise? Yeah, being picky.
Okay, whatever. Anyway, it's a very distinct flavor. And they had this veggie pizza. It had like two kinds of olives, black and green, and bell peppers and onions and mushrooms. It was glorious. And that was my favorite pizza when I was slightly older. I mean, I loved their cheese pizza when I was really little. And that was like the one, like, on my birthday, so many times we went to Mr. Gaddy's for my birthday, and they were awesome.
There's a YouTube video, the Gaddy's Pizza story of our sauce.
Okay, we have to watch.
I'll put a link in the show notes too.
That's the sauce is something I've spent a lot of time trying to get just right. I don't think that my sauce tastes exactly like Mr. Gaddy's, but it's close enough that it makes me happy. And then I really like the texture of the naan. It's soft in the middle.
Yeah.
And it gets nice crispy on the outside, but it's thicker. I like that.
See, I really prefer the New York style, the very thin crust.
But our local pizza place that we usually default to, they do not have great crust.
No, they don't. Like Pizzeria Regina.
Well, yeah. Right. I mean, if we could have Pizzeria Regina deliver, would be different.
I know. Or Papa Gino's, which the closest one closed. Erg. So, I think part of the naan pizza, too, is that the dough, like, naan is made with yogurt.
Yes.
So it's got that tanginess in it.
Yeah, it's got that little bit of a zing.
Not super noticeable.
No.
But it's got a little, like, when you eat it, and it's got that in. And it's got a chew to it. So that's good.
Yeah. I like it.
So we had that. So the other thing is we were talking about, we definitely have opinions on food between the two of us.
Oh.
That don't always agree.
Have you noticed? I can't imagine our listeners have not noticed this.
You know, like the great lasagna debate.
Right.
Tuna fish is another one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So from my point of view, this is how I like tuna fish. The tuna with plenty of mayo, chopped up half sour pickles, chopped up celery, that's all mixed together on a sub roll, and then with the hot pepper relish that you get at sub shops, which I managed to find at the grocery store, like, so hot peppers on it.
I think it's funny that you say with plenty of mayo, because one of the first criticisms, like the first time I made tuna fish for you, you said it had too much mayo.
Well, there can be too much mayo.
But when you say plenty of mayo, you don't actually mean plenty. You mean some mayo.
No.
Some very moderate
amount. The right amount of mayo.
Right. But it's not plenty.
What I'm contrasting with is there's some tuna salads out there that are like, we've waved a spoon of mayonnaise over it.
I've never seen that.
I mean, I'm exaggerating. But sometimes I get tuna salad. Like, usually if I make a salad bar or something like that, not in a sub, where it's relatively dry.
Okay. The other thing I should point out is that you are very picky about what kind of tuna. It has to be solid white, chunk light.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
See, I grew up with chunk light tuna.
No.
Which is cheaper.
Packed in water, not oil.
Right. Yeah. I'm with you on the water, not oil. The oil I've accidentally bought a few times, and I'm always a little bit like, what the heck is going on here?
Yeah. I mean, if it were Italian tuna, which is a whole different creature, the Italian packed in olive oil, and it's like, I mean, that's that's on a different level altogether. That's right. Something else. But like, you know, the albacore tuna, the, you know, sun, the, what was it? Chicken of the sea.
Chicken of the sea.
Yeah. That's a, it's gotta be a whole, the, what did I say? Chunk white?
Solid white.
Solid white packed in water.
Yes.
Now your tuna has everything but the kitchen sink in it.
Well, it's, which is, I've developed over time. I mean, when I was growing up, if I had tuna, it would be mayonnaise, a little bit of mustard, some pickle relish, and that was it. Like,
okay.
It was like very bare bones tuna fish.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, and it was good. The thing was that, like,
once the kids were here,
or just when I started to want to get more vegetables into my diet,
okay,
I started experimenting with what else can you add to tuna fish to get the crunch. Like, celery has got a nice crunch to it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind green apples and tuna fish, but you are definitely not.
You and the fruit and the savory thing.
Yeah, I love
strawberries on my salad and apples in my tuna fish.
I'm love that sweet and
choose
savory.
One.
That fruit and savory is great.
No,
I love it.
No,
yes.
No. I mean, there are times when fruit and savory work, like pineapple and a pasty, which we'll get to. But
right.
But no, not
okay. So anyway, I have graciously conceded the apple point, but now I've gone on a quest for more crunch and more stuff.
She's on a spirit quest for crunch.
So my standard tuna salad now has diced radishes.
There were some diced radishes. So when I made mine this week, I used the leftovers from the rice bowls. Mm-hmm. So it had diced radish in it, which worked out good. Bell pepper, sweet bell pepper.
Bell pepper?
That could work. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I like bell pepper. I like diced radish. Some red onion or some scallions or both.
Yeah. Maybe not so much the red onion. Tuna fish is already pretty, like, stink up your breath. Red onion will contribute to that.
Oh, whatever. You're in for a penny, in for a pound. That's what I say. I like that crunchy tuna. I like the onion with the tuna. It's good. What else do I add?
So the thing is, it's not that any of these things are objectionable. It's all of these things all in there at once. It becomes a little overwhelming.
It's like salad olives. With tuna. Olives. Oh, I love chopped olives.
The green onion, the green olives, the pimento olives.
I mean, if the kids weren't eating it, I would totally put like chopped jalapenos in it too and give it like a nice spicy
tuna. I was thinking pepperoncini.
Pepperoncini would be good too.
I think tuna sandwich needs a bit of spice.
Right.
It needs something to
gear
it up.
We usually add the spice separate, like on ours, but
that's why I get the hot pepper relish.
Right. Anthony and Sophie, not quite so much on the spice, although I think they could come around.
I think they'd go with it, yeah.
What else? Sometimes I like to add fresh herbs, like if I have some cilantro or...
You're losing me on that one.
Arugula, really good. Arugula's got that nice, like, spice.
A little bit of lettuce in the sandwich might be okay, yeah.
No. I mean, like minced.
Oh, I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. And I'm saying a little bit of lettuce in the sandwich would be okay.
In any case, I like mine to be like tuna salad, emphasis on salad.
Yeah, I'm kind of pushing this for effect. I enjoy when Melanie makes it. It's fine. I mean, I like it. I kind of like the way I have it. When I go out and if I'm at a sub shop and I order a tuna sub, it's pickles, tomatoes, hot peppers. That's what I want.
Right.
And that's what I get. Because I like the diced tomato in it. It's good. I don't know. I like the that's a little bit of the sweetness of the tomato.
Right. I can see that.
And then so I was saying like pepperoncini instead of the hot pepper relish, that would work for me too. Like sliced pepperoncini, that would work.
I would like to point out that one of my huge motivations too is that Anthony is not a vegetable eater.
You've got to sneak veggies in that kid any way you can.
He does not like vegetables or fruits, really. He's
or potatoes.
He is a resistor. But he loves tuna salad, and he will not object to any amount of vegetables chopped up in his tuna salad. He just scarfs it down.
You had to twist his arm to eat a fresh raspberry at dinner.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
He kept pretending to eat it.
But
I know you're not eating it. Put it in your mouth.
Yeah.
That it's not in your hand. Like you've not mastered sleight of hand, pen and teller. Come on.
Right.
Eat the raspberry.
Yeah, yeah. He's very stubborn.
Yes.
Very resistant.
Oh, gosh, I wonder where that came from.
But he has a few dishes that he likes that have a lot of vegetables in them. So I try to keep those fairly frequent in the rotation. Tuna salad is one. Quiche with spinach is another.
Yep.
he loves pasta sauce, so he will just eat it, like sit like a bowl of pasta sauce and eat it with a spoon.
And there's all kinds of edges in that he doesn't know about.
Oh, yeah. So I like to try to squeeze in as much as possible in those things that I know he will eat that he won't object to.
So let's talk about some more fasting food.
Yeah, yeah.
Fasting bread.
Right. Okay. I do not remember anymore where I found this recipe.
Okay, let's talk about fasting in general. People today have gotten themselves into the wrong idea of what fasting is, like the bread and water fast. It's a loaf of white bread and water, and that's the fast, and it's you punish yourself with this, and your body should suffer. And it's like, no. In fact, we found and this came from the Live the Fast website, which was created by a local guy here in the Boston area who runs a commercial bakery.
This is true.
And yes. He's also a very devout Catholic. And he discovered fasting, which is kind of ironic for a guy who runs a bakery. But he discovered the spiritual fruits of fasting and he wanted to encourage it. And he he researched and found fasting bread recipes from ages past, hundreds of years ago. And it turns out the bread that people ate when they were on a bread and water fast was not like plain white flour bread. In fact,
it was like lots of whole grains,
yeah.
Nuts and fruits.
Lots of nuts and fruit.
Like a meal in a loaf of bread.
Like good bread. Like not slathered with butter, obviously. I mean, that kind of defeats the intent and spirit of things. But it's nutritious.
But
it's
wholesome. But if you've got nuts, then you've got a lot of actually fats and proteins in there.
Right. And the fruit provides the sugars and the nutrition and, you know, the vitamins and things like that. I mean, it's good for you. You could live on this bread.
So I think at one point, was it when you were working at the Archdiocese that he like brought some of the
So he was on the radio program.
Right.
The Good Catholic Life that I used to work for. And yeah, they interviewed him. He brought in a bunch of the bread and I brought
some
home.
And you brought some home.
Yeah.
And there was this like pecan and cranberry loaf that was just amazing. It blew my mind. I loved it so much. Actually, it might have been walnuts and cranberries. I don't remember. My version, though, when I tried to recreate it, ends up having pecans and cranberries.
Yes.
Although I made some this weekend on Saturday. And I didn't have very many cranberries, so it's like some cranberries and some currants.
It's so good. Andy LaVallee, that's his name.
Oh, right.
And I'll try to link to a video of him. He's on Catholic TV. He actually had a series of shorts. They do something called Blink. They're like between the programs. Where he talked about fasting on that. So
interesting.
I'll link to it. He's a great guy. Andy is really cool. He's very Catholic businessman and brings his Catholic values into the business. Like if you go to the bakery and he provides like the top high end breads to all the big famous restaurants in Boston. But if you go into the bakery in the lobby, he's got like Statue of Mary and stuff. It's really cool. Anyway, the fasting bread is so good for like you're still fasting. You're still denying yourself, but you're not supposed to punish yourself. That's not the idea. So that's really good. The other thing that we made this week, not related to fasting, but you made more pasties.
Right.
The other day.
Yeah, I've been haunted for a while by this lamb that's been in the freezer. You grilled it last.
Haunted by a lamb.
you grilled this, I think, last June.
Yes.
That was the date on the package of lamb. So it's been sitting there.
In the freezer.
In the freezer. Yeah,
not in the fridge.
but it's been in there for a while. And honestly, I didn't really want to eat it. But I didn't want to throw it out. I felt guilty.
What can you do with leftover lamb? Like
you can
that?
Make shepherd's pie.
Right.
But I didn't really want shepherd's pie.
That's pretty much it.
Right. So, but I had this idea of dicing the lamb fine and putting it with potatoes and peas into pasties.
Hmm.
As it turned out, I forgot the peas. But it still turned out okay. I made it with like a mint sauce and it had like oregano and rosemary and it was really good.
It was good. It was really good. I mean, and it still had that grilled
Yeah, flavor. It had that grilled flavor, which was really nice.
Yeah.
And then I also had some pulled pork left over from some time or other.
Yet another meat thing that...
I got this huge amount of pulled pork, and then it turned out that nobody really wanted it at all, and so there was a whole bunch of it left over. I don't know why.
We might have been just, like, pulled porked out at that point. Right, or something. Like that.
Anyway, it was really, really good pulled pork. So I had this idea. I really wanted there to be pineapple in the pasties. So I got some pineapple.
A can of pineapple.
Yeah. I used maybe a third of a can, and I gave the rest of it to the three youngest kids to attack. And they sort of did a shark attack on it, feeding frenzy, and it was gone. So I minced up the pineapple really well, and I cooked it a little bit in the pan with just some oil and brown sugar. Let it caramelize a little bit. And I threw in some hot pepper. I used Aleppo pepper, but you could use just plain red pepper flakes. And then potatoes.
Bulldog sauce.
Potatoes, onions, celery, carrots. Chopped really fine, so it didn't have like gigantic chunks of these. And then, secret ingredient, bulldog sauce, which
it's a Japanese condiment, like almost
it's a barbecue.
Like it's a barbecue.
It's a sweet,
sauce.
not really spicy, but a sweet barbecue sauce.
It's literally it's a barbecue sauce that was introduced to Japan after the war by American soldiers stationed over there, and so it's a Japanese-ified version of it.
Right. It's very sweet.
It's used
tangy.
In tonkatsu. Was it or tonkatsu or is it or okonomiyaki?
Tonkatsu.
Tonkatsu. Okay. But yeah, it's served with it's, I mean, it's sweet and tangy. It's very much like a barbecue sauce. You could use a barbecue sauce, I suppose.
Right. You could, but I wanted something that was a little bit more like on the pineapple-y end of things, as opposed to the smoky barbecue end
of
things.
More sweet. Yeah.
Right. And it came out really well. I think I liked those even better than I liked the lamb pasties.
And none of, like the pie, it wasn't very strong in any direction. Like the flavors were really well balanced. So you didn't, it didn't taste like, oh, this is really bulldog sauce or really pineapple-y. Like you said, you could have used a little more pineapple in it probably.
Right.
But it was really well balanced. I really liked it. Yeah. It was good.
I feel like I've made these three times now, and I feel like I'm getting better at pastry.
And the next time it's fruit ones. Apple hand pie.
Maybe. I still have another package of pulled pork in there, and I've got a can of pineapple, so I've got my eyes on it.
I'm lobbying for a little apple hand pie.
Now, mind you, this is a fairly laborious process. I actually mixed up the pastry on
Saturday,
and then rolled them out and did the filling on Sunday, and it still took several hours to do.
Yeah, it's not something you can do every weekend.
No.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this makes a huge batch of it. Like, it's 6 cups of flour and an entire pound of butter.
To make, but you make what, like a dozen pasties?
The original recipe called for 8, but they were huge. So I cut that down. I cut them in half and I made 16.
Then, yeah. And like, it's 16, like
this
16 decent size.
Big size.
Like one of those was enough for a child. Like, for all of our, like, even the older kids.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I ate just one. So, I mean, it's
right.
There were
16 substantial. So, like, the 8 were, they were like.
They were huge. They were like calzone. They look like calzones.
Right. They were too big.
Yeah. So, maybe for Easter. Maybe something like that would be good at Easter.
Fruit pies at Easter?
Yeah.
Maybe not like Easter itself, but like Easter week or something.
Yeah. Somewhere around that.
Yeah.
So that's what we've been eating. Let's move on to talking about what we've been reading or watching, or in my case, listening to.
Okay.
So I rediscovered that some time ago I had bought the Star Wars radio dramas that were on public radio back in the 80s of the original three. New Hope, although they didn't call it New Hope, it was just Star Wars at the time.
Right.
And then Empire and Return of the Jedi.
I still feel like New Hope sounds weird. Like, what are you talking about?
It's just Star Wars, right?
It's just Star Wars. Okay. It's
well,
Star Wars, Return of the Jedi.
Us Star Wars
Empire
fans,
Space
we call it ANH, okay?
I am so rolling my eyes at that.
So I'd had these for years, and I really hadn't listened to them. And I had them on the computer. I bought them as downloadable. which, because years ago I had them as audio cassettes. Now those are long gone. I lost those at some point when I was a kid.
You actually had the audio cassettes?
Oh, yeah.
You were so geeky.
I was. Oh, man, it was so cool. But so I recently found them. I reprocessed them into, the problem was they were just like 30, 40 audio files, individual episode files. And I now have software that lets me turn them into an audiobook. And
oh,
so
nice.
I audiobooked them into iTunes, and now they're in iTunes. You can download them and listen to them onto your phone and all this stuff. And so I, like, the kids were like, what are you talking about? What is this? So I started playing it for them. And so what it is, it's like 5 hours. Each one is 5 hours long. So it's well more than what was on TV, and it's been turned into a radio drama. It's a radio play. So it has the John Williams' music. It has the sound effects from the movies. And it's got the original actors in it. The Mark Hamill's in the first one. Mark Hamill's in it. Anthony Daniels is in it. And I think they're the only two actors from the original.
But not Carrie Fisher or Harrison Ford.
No. In fact, Harrison Ford is replaced as Han Solo as this guy who actually went out for the part. Perry King. Thank you. Who was like...
Which I only know because you told me.
Yes. He was in 1977, 78. He was the next big thing. Like, he was the thing. Which is kind of funny. And Darth Vader is not done by James Earl Jones. It's done by what is his name? He was in Star Trek. He played Captain Sisko's father.
I don't know.
Yeah. So anyway, it's kind of weird. And then they have like these extra scenes. Like there's like these two big segments, like the half hour segments to start it. One is like Luke hanging out with his buddies at Tosche Station, which was filmed and cut from the original movie. And this is based on it. It's not exactly the same, but it's based on it. It's got this whole thing that Luke having a race through Beggar's Canyon and stuff.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And then there's this whole other thing, which is hysterical, of Princess Leia and her dad, the king.
Her dad, the king?
Dad, the king, because she's a princess.
She's a princess, of course.
And this Imperial officer.
It's never made any sense to me that her dad isn't a king.
And Imperial officer who has this really cringy the hots for her. She's like 17, 18, and he's like trying to arrange a marriage with her and all this other stuff, and she ends up killing him. Like, this is all like in the first, like before
this
the beginning.
Like, this sounds like a story that Isabella and Sophia would make up.
It does.
Doesn't it?
It does. So we listen to the first hour, and like, so all of that precedes the actual movie, and then it pretty much follows the movie from that point.
So they basically created their own little prequel.
Sort of. They had needed to fill it out. Brian Daley wrote he wrote this, but he also wrote the novelization. So he had access to all the materials that they had. Novelization, because movie scripts are always longer than what ends up on screen.
Of course.
Things get cut. And so he had access to all that. So he put a bunch of that in and wrote, expanded on it. So there are expanded scenes and other stuff in it as well. There's other things.
Fun.
So it's a lot of fun. The kids are really interested in it. Oh my gosh, they were really like, oh,
new Star Wars.
Yeah.
Duh,
more Star Wars. So but it is a little weird to hearing other voices do these roles. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, that would kind of throw me off.
So what have you been reading this week?
Let's see. I have been reading a novel by one of my favorite novelists, Rumor Godden. This one is 5 for Sorrow, 10 for Joy. And it is a novel about a group of nuns in France after World War II. And basically it's told with a lot of like flashbacks and sort of jumps
back and forth.
It's very, which is very much a Rumor Godden sort of thing. But basically this group of nuns was founded. It's kind of hard to explain. They're the sisters of, now I can't remember. Anyway, they call their monasteries Bethanies, or not monasteries, convents, because they're not really enclosed. And so their mission is to serve prisoners. But this is different from just visiting women in prison, because what they do is, in fact, invite them into the religious life, so that each religious house is actually made up of almost equal parts women who are former prisoners and women who came in a more conventional route. And this is actually based on a real order that Rimmergotten had researched and met with. And so it started off with a priest who preached a mission to this prison. And he was expecting, okay, he was a Christmas mission. He was expecting maybe 20 prisoners to show up. And he was stunned because 400 showed up.
Mm.
And he set up perpetual adoration. He's thinking, you know, one or two prisoners might show up for adoration, you know, for each hour. And while adoration is going on, he's hearing confessions. So he's not really paying attention. And so, like, at midnight, he suddenly hears this loud noise, and he like gets up and sticks his head out of the confessional. And what he hears is 200 women getting up and leaving adoration while another 200 come to take over. Wow. Because all 400 of them had divided themselves into two groups to adore all night long, giving up their sleep because they were still, the prison was still requiring them to do their usual work, get up at the usual time. They didn't get a Christmas holiday or anything, but they gave up their sleep to adore. And he was so blown away by this response from the prisoners. He wanted to do something more with it. And so he had this idea of a religious order that would, once they had been released from prison, they could come and discern the religious life. And his model was Bethany, the House of Mary and Martha. And of course, nowadays, biblical scholars debate about whether the Mary of Mary and Martha was the same as Mary Magdalene and whether Mary Magdalene was indeed a prostitute. But we're going to run with it for the sake of this story.
Right.
The Mary there was Mary Magdalene, and she was the prostitute, which is really appropriate because so many of these women who are in prison are former prostitutes. They're in there for prostitution. They're in for murder. And our protagonist is in for murder. And she was not just a prostitute. She was the madam of this house in Paris. But she was actually also the victim of human trafficking because she had been sort of abducted after the war. She'd been a British woman who was a driver for an American officer.
Yeah.
And she got separated from her command, and she found by this French guy who ends up
trafficking her.
Yeah. So it's a really interesting story. It's very much about sin and redemption. And it's perfect for Lent, I think. I mean, it really gets into the interior disposition and that movement from sin into grace and that hopefulness.
Hmm.
I love the story. It's so beautiful.
Rimmergotten's 5 for sorrow, 10 for joy.
I will say that Godden does not pull any punches in terms of the main character's past. So there's a lot that's not...
If you're very sensitive to that sort of thing.
It gets kind of grimy and sordid.
Not graphic, per se.
But certainly not not an easy read. Yeah. At times, there are... The women who are in prison are there because they've had very, very hard lives. And a lot of them have done...
Bad things.
And she doesn't stint on...
Being honest about the
struggles,
yeah,
and some of the bad things that they've seen and experienced.
5 for sorrow, 10 for joy, but there is no sequel. 15 for rage.
No, and of course the title 5 for sorrow, 10 for joy refers to the rosary.
Yes,
5 sorrowful mysteries, and then the 10 joyful plus glorious mysteries, which means the rosary has a lot more joy than sorrow.
And then Luminous Mysteries, don't forget, which we're not,
Rimmergotten wrote the novel, there was no Luminous Mysteries.
But that means there's even more joy in the rosary.
This is true.
All right. We'll have links to those in the show notes. And so I wanted to talk about this past Sunday's gospel reading, the readings for Mass, not just the gospel, the first reading and the gospel and Paul's reading related as well.
Okay, you'll have to refresh my mind because I can't tell you what that was.
It's always the first Sunday of Lent is always the same. It's the temptation in the desert, the temptation
right,
in the garden.
Of course.
So I was surprised the deacon actually hit on some of these points, these lesser known points about the temptation in the garden. So we know the story. Adam and Eve in the garden, the tree of there's the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil.
Right.
And they are forbidden to eat from the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And the snake comes in the garden and gets Eve to bite the fruit. So first thing is one of this was a story that was the first thing we studied when I studied biblical the principles of biblical of Bible study or biblical study in college at Franciscan University when I was in my theology degree. And it's so much fun to watch Dr. Andy Minto, shutting down like everyone who comes in with their assumptions. All right, what's happening here? Well, the devil. No, wrong. What? No, the devil. Wrong. It's a snake. And it's like, yes, it's a snake. Nowhere does it call him the devil. It's a snake. The devil, the idea that it's a devil is an interpretation that's been brought into it. But in fact, it's not even just a snake. The Hebrew word used there is nahash, which carries with it the connotation and understanding, you know, or the context. It's a dragon. It's a giant serpent. It's you know, in Old English, we call it a worm. You know, think Smaug in The Hobbit.
In other words, most of the medieval and Renaissance artists got it wrong?
Yes. It's just like it's not an apple. It's a fruit. They call it an apple because the Latin word for apple is malo, which sounds like mal.
Mala,
which sounds like malo, which is means evil. So, you know, apple, fruit, evil.
Right.
So
It was a pun.
But
it
like,
was a visual pun that the
got lost in time.
Medieval artists loved, and then people just forgot that it was a pun.
It's a joke, people. I can just picture the artist. Anyway, so here you have this dragon at the tree, not this, you know, snake hanging from a branch. You have this dragon, and you can imagine how Adam and Eve would have felt about being confronted by this creature. And the big thing, the couple important points here is, so he says to Eve, did God really tell you not to eat from any of the trees in the garden? Now, picture that in that Benedict Cumberbatch Smaug voice, okay? Did God really tell you not to eat from any of the trees in the garden? Well, of course he didn't. Of course not. But the woman makes a mistake. We may eat of any of the fruit of the trees of the garden. It's only about the fruit of the tree in the middle of the garden that God said, you shall not eat it or even touch it, lest you die. God didn't say don't touch it. You could go touch. I'm touching it. Touch. I'm not going to die. Touch. She would have been fine. Her mistake there was to distort God's command, God's law, to make it seem worse than it is. Which then gives you the excuse to, well, that's a bad rule. God's just being too harsh. What's he trying to pull? I'm going to break that rule because it's just too harsh. You know, that's the first break that the devil has got in there. Okay. And then of course he tells her, you certainly shall not die. But the other thing that happens here is she took some of its fruit and ate it. And then she turned and she gave some to her husband who was with her. What? He was standing there the whole time. Adam, what are you doing? While your wife is being tempted to break God's commandment, you're standing there like a dummy doing nothing. You know, you step up. And Scott Hahn is the one who really, you know, kind of opened my eyes to a lot of this with his writing on this particular set of verses, this story. And one of the things he talks about is what was Adam supposed to do? He was supposed to do what Jesus eventually did. Stand up, confront the serpent, and even to the point of sacrificing his life to save her from sin. You know, throw himself at the serpent and die, trusting in God, that God would save him or resurrect him at that moment. But to do it to save his bride. And that's what Jesus does. He throws himself at the serpent, dies for our sake.
Sort of like throwing yourself on the bomb.
Exactly. This is what a husband does. A husband protects his family. He protects his beloved. He protects his wife. And that's what Adam should have done. That's why the sin is Adam's sin. Like, yes, Eve sinned by eating the fruit, but we talk about Adam's sin. Adam's sin is that he didn't protect Eve. So I really love that about this verse. I do have more questions about this, and I need to do some more digging. But why did God put the tree there? Was God like saying, this is a test? Kaboom! Here's a tree. Don't eat it. Now let's step back and see if they really eat it. Or was there another reason why it was there? Why was this tree that they weren't supposed to eat from in the garden in the first place? Why not put it outside the garden?
I have to say, my favorite bit is actually the whole tree of life thing.
Mm-hmm.
So in Sunday's Office of Readings, the first Psalm's antiphon is, "See how the cross of the Lord is revealed as the tree of life." And I just love that. Like, You almost blip over that in the first reading in Genesis, that there's two trees in the middle of the garden. There's the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, but there's also this other tree, the tree of life. And you don't really hear much about it. It's mentioned and then kind of gone. But so the church sort of in the antiphon draws out that tree of life we see again, it's the cross.
He is hung upon the tree. Yes. Right. The church fathers have very often made that connection that the tree of life is the cross itself. It brings us life. And that's, that's the tree Adam probably would have died on, but would have risen from at the same time because it is a tree of life. So, yeah.
So if he had died for Eve, well, the tree of life was right there.
He would have risen again.
Right.
Right. Because they did not know death. There was no death in Eden, in paradise.
Death became because of sin.
Right. Because of sin. So so
if there had been no sin, there would have been no death.
Right.
He,
the serpent could not have killed him.
If you strike me down, I will only grow stronger, right? Is that the idea?
Yes. Yes, Darth, he says to the serpent. Nahash, if you strike me down, I will only grow stronger, and then I will be a force ghost.
Adam the force ghost. So I thought that what I wanted to say, just to interject real quickly, is that the kids and I are reading St. Patrick's Summer for our Lenten reading. And today's reading actually has the protagonists in the story meeting with Eve.
Ooh.
Which it's one of my favorite things. Yes.
That would be awkward.
Yeah, that would be weird. She's wearing a deer skin, which is actually really nicely symbolic because they had just met with St. Patrick in the previous chapter. And he had told them about the deer's cry when he and the other monks were turned into deer or were given the seeming of deer to save them from the guys who wanted to kill them.
Oh, right.
Which is why St. Patrick's breastplate is also called the deer's cry, the prayer that he wrote.
Oh,
I rise today with the power of the Trinity, believing in threeness, confessing the oneness. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's the song. That's the song that they were singing, and then they were turned into deer, and the guys who were going to try to kill them heard it as the cry of the deer.
All right. I know we're going long. I just want to get a little bit about the gospel. So, of course, in this, Jesus is tempted by the devil in the desert. Jesus is led by the Spirit to the desert, which is interesting. Jesus is to be tempted by the devil. He's not just, happens to be out there and, oh, hey, that you're here. No, this is why he's there in the desert. So Adam and Eve in a garden with everything they could ever want. Jesus in the desert. And he fasted for 40 days and 40 nights. And afterwards, he was hungry.
I'm guessing he was hungry probably before, like after the 40 days. And 40
I love
minutes.
The understatement of that. And by the, like, in the obvious, like, well, there's a reason it tells us that. It's letting us know Jesus is fully human. Jesus is human.
It wasn't just like, oh, he wandered in the desert and he didn't eat for 40 days and he was fine.
But he's God. He didn't get hungry or anything. No, he was.
I want to know, like, when they say he fasted for 40 days, does that mean like no food or water passed his lips?
Well,
or
see, now if that were the case, now we're getting back into divine intervention category.
Right.
Not the human nature. I don't know. Is the preternatural human nature mean that we could last 40 days and 40 nights without food or water? Because certainly our fallen bodies can't.
Right.
So maybe it could. Well, in either case, he's hangry. You're not at your best when you've been fasting. And so, this is when he gets the temptation. And the devil says, well, if you're the son of God, make
bread.
Command these stones
bread.
To be bread.
Just have some bread. It's that easy. All you have to do is say bread and it's bread. Boom.
Yes. Because this is what Jesus does later on, the feeding of the 5,000. Right. More bread.
He could have made bread of the stones. That
of
was
course.
Completely well, within his power.
All of creation was made through Jesus Christ, through the word of God. So he could make a Chick-fil-A right there if he wanted to.
Chick-fil-A. Sounds good.
So, and he said, Jesus doesn't say, no, it's wrong to tempt me. No, he quotes scripture.
Right. I love that. The scripture is good for fighting the devil with.
Nor does he deny that he could make the stones into bread. Nor does he deny that he maybe even wants to. But he just says, one does not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes forth from the mouth of God. He's not directly answering the devil's temptation. He's just saying, by the way, bread isn't that important in the grand scheme of things.
There are more important things than bread, like the word of God, which is actually...
Hey, me!
Me! I'm the word of God!
Yes. Then the devil took him to the holy city and made him stand on the parapet of the temple. So as high as you could possibly get in those days on a man-made structure. If you're the son of God, throw yourself down. You throw yourself down! And then he quotes the Bible at him because the devil knows the Bible just as well as better than we do.
Jesus quotes the Bible at the devil. So the devil responds by quoting the Bible at Jesus. I kind of like the symmetry of that.
Yes. Well, he'll command his angels concerning you and with their hands, he will support you lest you dash your foot against the stone.
Which is, that's from the Psalms, right?
Right. Jesus answers him again. It is written, you shall not put the Lord your God to the test. Boom. And then the devil takes him up to a very high mountain and shows him all the kingdoms of the world and their magnificence and said, I shall give these to you, King of the universe. Even the kids got that.
The kids were snickering at that one. Actually, like, it was kind of funny.
He already has all those things. He's the King of the universe. He is the Lord of Lords, King of Kings. But the devil doesn't, he thinks that it's his to give, which is, and all these I shall give to you if you will prostrate yourself and worship me. Okay, I have to stop there. There's a meme of a verse a day calendar. You know those glurgy verse a day calendars you find in the bathrooms of pious ladies like my mom. And so on January 23rd, and so there was one. There's a meme going around of one January 23rd, Matthew 4:7 or something, whatever the exact verse is, and it's like, in all these I shall give to you if you will prostrate yourself and worship me. And it's like, and the meme says, not so inspiring when you know who actually said that. Like, it's implying, like, this verse a day is implying that God is saying this to us. No, that's the devil's temptation. Like, whoever made this verse a day calendar was not really paying close attention when they were lifting verses.
There was a little somebody nodded a bit.
And Jesus says to this, he's had enough. Get away, Satan. Bring me a Snickers. And the angels came and ministered to him. But this is also not just the repudiation or the making up for what Adam and Eve did in the Garden
reparation?
Of Eden. Reparation. But it's also reparation for the faithlessness of Israel in the desert. Again, 40 years in the desert, giving into temptation. The God provided manna in the desert and the people got tired. Manna again?
Oh, gosh.
Miraculous bread out of nothing again?
God, can't we just have some meat, please? Yeah. The stupid manna stuff again.
Could we at least have some peanut butter with it? I mean...
They'd known about peanuts, probably. Yeah.
Have you heard of fasting manna? With some cranberries and nuts? It's that repudiation of it. And then the whole, like, remember when God wanted them to go into Canaan, the land of milk and honey, and they're like, oh, I've heard the Canaanites are giants. I don't want to do that. Not trusting in God. Like, as in, if I will give this land to you, I will give this land, and which Jesus, again, overcomes that temptation, you know, of not trusting in God, that God has already given him all that he needs. You know, so it's an interesting parallel there with that. Jesus is overcoming that. And of course, we hear this because Jesus goes in the desert for 40 days and 40 nights, and Lent for us is a time of going into the desert for 40 days and 40 nights, and we will be tempted by the devil. He will try to get us to be faithless and to not have this time of conversion and metanoia, return to the Lord, be fruitful for us. And frankly, I'm going to tell you, you're going to sin in the next 40 days. Most all of you in the sound of my voice are probably going to sin. Maybe the Blessed Mother's listening to this podcast, in which case you're exempted, obviously, great lady. But all the rest of you are going to sin, and you're going to fail, but that's okay. You come back, you repudiate the devil, and you rely on Jesus who managed to do it without sinning. So all things like us except in sin and being able to last for 40 days and 40 nights without eating.
Yeah, I still have questions.
Lots of questions. That's what heaven is for. We get our right. questions
answered. Oh my gosh. I've got a list. Like, I get to heaven. Like, hi God, do I have a list for you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Get in line. So does everybody else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Here's the FAQ.
Right?
What is God's FAQ? That's a topic for another time. We're going long here, so we don't want to keep people any longer, but what is on God's FAQ? So before we go, I want to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Daniel Z, Kimberly W, Joel D, Christopher L, and Kerry C. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets in all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So that's it from us. What did you think of our discussion? If you have any comments, we'd love to hear from you. You can comment at sqpn.com/bets, that's BETTS, or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, or you can send us an email to bets@sqpn.com. And like I said, we'll have all the links from our discussion in our show notes on sqpn.com. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.